Hello and welcome to Power the Parent, the podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Speak. I'm a level 7 CMI accredited coach, a StrengthsScope master practitioner, mental health first aider and talent consultant. And I'm also the face behind Power of the Parent. In this podcast, I'll be speaking to parents in the workplace. Some of them are in traditionally employed roles, others are running their own businesses, and we're having conversations about life in general, insights about being a parent and having a career, and exploring the strengths that parenting has awoken for people. We will talk about things like the value that they're bringing to the workplace, as well as my guests very generously sharing their personal stories and anecdotes about everything life can throw at us. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Power of the Parent, the podcast. Today, I am joined by Shivani Uberoi, the founder of the Wallflower Academy, creating workplaces where everyone can be themselves by partnering with businesses to drive the equality agenda and optimize employee well-being. So you can probably see why I'm drawn to Shivani's work. Shivani sums up her mission as to accelerate equality by driving sustainable culture change, which unlocks an individual's full potential. Her CV includes roles in huge businesses, Sky, PwC, Tesco all feature on there, where she has inevitably gathered her impetus and experiences to bring the Wallflower Academy to life. I came across Shivani after her recent LinkedIn post covering the eye-watering stats on the widening gender pay gap, but it did have a list of practical ways employers can invest in the progression and retention of women in the workplace that made my heart sing. So hopefully that's going to be the tone for our conversation today. And I will also add that Shivani is a parent, and there'll be loads of things that we could probably put in there, but have I captured the main things to introduce you, Shivani?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, no, thank you. I'm sure we'll come on to other things as we talk through all the different conversations that we have.
Yeah, you've got a few different experiences to bring, haven't you? So yes, thank you so much for joining me today. The first question that I want to go straight in there with is, talk me through the name of the Wallflower Academy and where this has come from for you.
Well, I guess there's two things. One, the movie, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. I don't know if you've seen it. You're nodding. So yes, you have. And I love that film. And I think one of the main things that really resonated with me in that movie was just this sense of being able to be yourself, but be different, but be yourself and being proud of that. And that really resonated with me, mainly because I guess both in life and in my career, I've always felt a little bit like I don't belong, whether that's because I'm a minority in the room or just because I have different opinions. And, you know, early on in my career, I really felt like I was almost trying to fit in. And sometimes that meant, you know, I was mirroring other people's values and I was just not being myself and I wasn't being authentic. And, you know, it got to the point where sometimes I would like, yeah, I would dislike myself because the way I was talking, and it was quite hard because I felt like this is the way I have to be to succeed. But then I realized, you know, it's so exhausting and I just couldn't do it. And then I was just really lucky that I had mentors and brilliant sponsors who had my back, and I was able to, you know, have the self-belief to be myself and still be successful in my career. But, you know, it was hard work. And that's really the essence of Wallflower. It's like giving people the self-belief and the confidence to be themselves and still be successful, and just working with organizations to create that culture of, yeah, belonging.
Amazing. I haven't ever watched the film the whole way through, but I'm familiar with the concept and the storyline in there. And yeah, that's a really beautiful way to sum it up. And the word that you used right at the beginning of that around belonging is something that comes up a lot in my line of work, and I'm guessing yours as well, that ultimately that's what we're trying to create in workplaces for people, so that you can show up and bring your whole self. And I got asked last week, what do you mean by bringing your whole self to the workplace? And it was a really interesting discussion that ensued. It was a line manager session that I was doing. And I think it's a concept that sometimes we take for granted that people know what that means when we say it. And it's just like accepted that, well, of course, that's what you want to create in the workplace. But I've definitely had my eyes opened at points where it can feel like an alien concept to some people. So I think it's incredibly important, the work that you're doing and the way that you've shared your story there. So thank you for that rundown. One of the things that I would be really interested to talk to you about is something that, and I've seen you post about it as well, is this, I guess, desire or this searching that can sometimes happen when you work within organizations. And I know a lot of people listening are in that employer realm of looking for some sort of silver bullet, quick fix solution. And I know, like, we've got all the whole, we've got the societal conversation to have there about what is encouraged and that's celebrated, the quick fixes. But in terms of what you see with your clients, but also how you would like to move past that, can you just talk to me a bit about your experience with that and your feelings towards the whole silver bullet quick fix approach?
Yes, everybody loves quick fix, right? And, you know, it often comes from like the right intention, because, you know, nobody wants to believe that they're biased, or nobody wants to be biased. And, you know, organizations don't want to have a culture of bias. So, you know, they'll do whatever they can really quickly to try and fix it. But the reality is that change takes time, right? And there is no one answer. And I'm sure you see this all the time, that actually, yes, you know, parents are one group, but even for parents, it's, you know, every parent is different. So actually the support they need is different and their experiences are different. Yes, there's overlap, but there's also differences. So sometimes I feel like actually having this quick fix mentality can be a bit dangerous. Mm. And one of the things that I see in organizations quite a lot is where there's companies where there's a lot of women in junior positions, but not many women in senior positions. And that happens a lot. And, you know, I'm sure you recognize that triangle, which many companies have with that hierarchy. And then one of the strategies that companies then use is hiring at the senior level. Yes, that makes sense, that, you know, trying to get more women in at senior positions, because, you know, that's where the gap is. But what they're not doing is then addressing the root cause, like, why are women not progressing internally? And then how that sometimes then plays out is women are being hired in senior leadership positions, but then they're not set up for success, because the root cause hasn't been fixed, the culture hasn't been fixed. And then there's extra pressure on these women to sometimes be the fixers. But also, you know, they might not fit into the culture. And often what I then see is that they're overwhelmed, they're stressed, and then they end up leaving, right? So it's like, it's a quick fix, but it's a short-term fix, because actually in a couple of years' time, those women, you know, won't stay there and the retention won't be there because they haven't been set up for success. Mm. And I see this often and often. And, you know, often I see this with my clients and my coachees in particular, where they've gone into a role and they feel really overwhelmed because, you know, there's all these barriers in place, and then they feel like it's their responsibility to kind of try and change it because they've come in at that senior leadership position. So, yeah, so I guess with organizations, it's about, you know, taking that like bigger picture view that, yes, hiring at senior leadership is important. You know, you get the role models, etc. But also, you know, what are you doing around the pipeline and bringing that pipeline through internally? So mm-hmm. It's about, you know, having a strategy that is like holistic. And in the article that I shared, the one that you referenced earlier, it was around the gender pay gap and how actually when you're over 40, most organizations find that the gender pay gap over 40 is 3 times as higher for women under 40. So, you know, that's interesting, right? And what's happening when you hit 40? So some of it is parenting. So what are you doing around parenting? Some of it is menopause. What are you doing around the menopause? So there's so many different things. So actually just focusing on one is just not going to work, or definitely not in the long term.
I totally agree with so much of what you said there. And I think it's almost like we've got to change the definition of the comfort blanket, that I think sometimes people take more hope in the quick fixes than they do in the long-term strategy. And I know that it can sometimes feel painful. It can sometimes feel like, well, we've got a problem right now, so we need to change it right now. And that there is a world where that can coexist, I think. And I'd be interested to hear your take on it. And I'm thinking out loud now, but I suppose there are things that you can do that can be quick fixes, which we don't want to demonize that completely, because if you have got a burning platform that needs solving, fair enough. But I suppose in isolation, that's where it becomes a problem, isn't it? That's the transactional stuff, that if you want it to be transformational, you want it to take you in a stronger strategic direction, that it's about combining the two rather than, yeah, villainizing one or the other. Let's kind of bring it all together.
100%. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there's definitely space for these quick fixes, and, you know, everybody wants results, and, you know, change is taking painstakingly a slow time. So of course, where we can have these quick fixes, then we should definitely implement them, but, you know, go in it with our eyes wide open, right? So yeah, if you are hiring at the senior level, hiring senior women in, what support are you giving them to succeed? You know, maybe like career coaching or other support to, you know, to support them, you know, being aware that the culture isn't quite there to support them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in recruitment, changing job descriptions, things like that can also be a quick fix, and that actually often works quite well. Mm-hmm. And that's probably an area that you can make, I guess, quick change, you know, looking at a job description description, changing the wording around it to make sure it's inclusive. So yeah, there is definitely a place for quick fixes. But yeah, I guess the main point of this discussion is there is just not one answer, right? So it's not like you fix one thing and you're done, because yeah, I'm yet to meet an organization where that works.
Yes, please do.
I mean, I'd love to, but
yes, yeah, so anybody listening wants to give us some great examples of lasting change of quick fixes, please feel free to correct us. You've kind of given me a bit of a segue there with talking about particularly the female side of things here. One of the videos that you have shared previously is around self-promotion, and it's a really interesting topic to me because it comes up a lot, as I'm sure it does with yours, comes up a lot with clients of mine. I do quite a lot of work with people around their self-trust and that kind of your own internal narrative, trusting that. And sometimes it can get, there's a fear there about, if I believe in myself too much, is that going to make me come across like a gigantic ego? Or am I going to look like I am not open to feedback? We kind of go down that typical human negativity bias that we've all got. But I think, and it's coming up a lot right now in the realm of being in the room and being physically in a workplace, and obviously the repercussions of how inclusive is that realistically. I'm going off on a tangent there. The question that I wanted to ask you was, from your perspective and the work that you do, how do we equip people better to feel comfortable with self-promotion, regardless of where you physically are in the workplace? That's probably a really gigantic question, isn't it? But from what you've seen and like the things that come to the forefront for you, what would you kind of love people to do more of when it comes to self-promotion?
I guess believe in themselves. And I guess similar to you, yeah, you know, I see it a lot with my clients, but I've seen it in myself, right? You know, and I'm sure you have as well. Like, and I said it in my video that, you know, at the beginning of my career, it was really uncomfortable for me to self-promote because I associated it with bragging. And actually then what I learned is they're two different things, actually. Talking about my achievements and what I've done well is very different to them bragging about it. And what I learned was actually people aren't going to know how great I am and the brilliant things that I've done unless I tell them, right? And yes, there's a role of sponsors as well. And you know, there's a role for sponsors to advocate for you and talk about you. And that's something organizations can do and managers can do. But, you know, the responsibility does sit within ourselves because, you know, you can't rely on someone else, you know, talking you up and shouting about your achievements. So how can we change that mindset that, yes, it's not bragging and, you know, it doesn't make us look bad? How do we find a way to do it authentically? So, yeah, so I guess that is the biggest thing for me that I talk to my clients about on an individual basis. But then I also then talk to them about, okay, you know, talk about your achievements, you know, with your line manager, identify your sponsors, you know, find a way that if you don't want to be amplifying your voice yourself across the organization, what are other ways to do it? And some of that is through using other people and using other people's voices. But I think it does essentially come back down to you, right? And your mindset and being comfortable with it. And, you know, even I'm not 100% comfortable with it now. I mean, since I started my whole self-employment journey, I've had to, you know, learn a complete new way of self-promoting, like on LinkedIn, right? And I found that really uncomfortable. But again, it's like, you know, I'm trying to do great work here. I'm trying to help people, right? And I'm not going to be able to help people unless they know what I do and they know my skill set. And then if they know my skill set, then hopefully they will engage with me and then I can help them. So, you know, come back to your why, right? And there's another thing that we talk about is what is your why? What are you trying to achieve? And then what do you need to get there? And often that will be, you know, if you're trying to get to that promotion or you're trying to achieve a certain goal, you need to talk about what you're doing to, you know, get that interview. So, you know, come back to your why.
I think that's so powerful. And I think the question that you've just provided there, or the I guess that statement about come back to your why, or what is your why, if you want to reframe it as a question, can be something that could be so easily slotted into a line manager's toolkit. Because one of the things that I'll often come up against is this fear of, from a line manager perspective, of saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing, and therefore they end up doing nothing out of panic. And actually that can sometimes have a bigger consequence than actually, you know, saying the slightly the wrong thing. I'm not advocating for, you know, intentionally going out there and being naughty, but certainly kind of giving it a go and trying to have some of these conversations, particularly for parents in the workplace, that, you know, we can feel a bit lost. The things that are famed for being eroded when you become a parent are things like your self-worth, the value that you add in the workplace, your self-belief and trust, and all of those things that I think it is about reconnecting with who you are and what's important to you. And your why is the core of that, isn't it? And you don't have to be a coach to ask that question of people, do you?
Exactly,
you're just being
no,
a curious
exactly.
human.
Exactly, yeah. Like, why is this important to you? Yeah, yeah. You know, and often when you ask that question, it is just really powerful. And yeah, and we can all ask that question. And the other place I see this come up a lot, actually, is when women are about to go on maternity leave. I'm sure you probably see it as well, because there's always that time where a woman's about to go on maternity leave. She's working on this big, big project and it won't quite be completed, right? And I had this the other day. So a couple of weeks ago, a client of mine is going on maternity leave. This is her first big project that would be going to the exec. And she's really stressing herself to try and get it done before she goes. But actually, it's not realistic and there's not enough time. So I asked her, why is it so important to you to complete it before you go away? Because she wanted the recognition. She wanted the exec to give her, I guess, the recognition for the skills and everything she's put into it, which of course, everybody would want that. What's another way of achieving that? Speak to your line manager. And yes, then it goes back to your line manager, right? If he's then the one presenting it, he needs to make sure the credit is given to the right person and he or she amplifies the voice of that person on maternity leave. And having that conversation with the line manager can be quite uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And she hadn't had it yet, but then she was going to go away and have that conversation. And that comes a bit to the self-belief, mm-hmm. focusing on your why, and also knowing if you don't have that conversation, it's you don't know what's going to happen, right? Yeah, will your line manager talk about you or will he not? You don't know. So yeah, it comes up a lot. And I think also just raising awareness of it. Like, yeah, if a line manager had a little bit of a toolkit, because I see this, I say, with 100% of women going on maternity leave. So if a line manager knew this was like a thing, then they would know, okay, she's about to go on maternity leave. What projects is she working on? What can I do to advocate for her while she's away? You know, making sure she's still in the conversations and she's not forgotten. Because we do feel forgotten, right? Like, 6, 9 months, 1 year, however long we take it, if it's a long time.
Tremendously. And I had a very similar situation. I was working with a dad not so long ago who was going on shared parental leave. And he was in a workshop with me about preparing for parental leave. And it was inevitable that a project, I don't think it was like an exec visibility thing in this instance, but it was a really big project that he'd been involved in for like 18, it was 18 months worth of work. Wow. And then he was taking, I don't think it was shared parental leave in the classic sense, because he was taking a little bit longer. I think he was having just over 6 months away from the business, and it was an overlap with his partner that his employer, I better not name them because I haven't checked, but they've been trialing some different approaches to parental leave, and he was kind of the guinea pig for what this might look like in the future. So there was a bit of a double whammy for him, that he was like, right, I've got to make this look really good, that it works for, in his instance, it was for a dad, but also I'm having some of the same feelings that people talk about, that women get in the workplace, about, am I going to be forgotten? How am I going to stay connected? All of those things. Anyway, that was the background that nobody asked for, but that's the context. So when it came to it, he was using some keep in touch days, or had planned to. So the conversation that he ended up having with his line manager, was there any way that they could make sure they could engineer some of the briefing sessions? Could she put those in for his keep in touch days so that he could still be a part of it? And so he wasn't going to land the whole thing. It just was impossible. Baby had arrived and he was having a significant period of time away from the business. They couldn't shape anything else around him. But one way that he still remained connected was to almost say up front, I think this is going to be a really good use of a keep in touch day. Can we therefore make sure that happens? And that line manager, I don't know, but I don't think it had entered her head at the time to plan that, but he initiated it. Nobody's going to have his back like he did. Mm-hmm. And he was able to feel, you know, like, actually, I'm now a really great example of how you can use a keep in touch day in a really targeted way. So not just, yeah, we offer kit days out, but that we actually do it with strategy, because sometimes keeping touch days can get a bit of a bad rep, can't they? But in this instance, it did feel like he was really flying the flag from all angles.
Yeah, that's a brilliant example. And I also like that you're talking about working dads, right? Because, you know, a lot of companies are rightfully now trying to advocate for shared parental leave. But, you know, of course, men are going to be worried about the same things that women have been worrying about for years and years. So actually making sure that culture is there for dads as well as moms is so important to try and encourage them to take that shared parental leave. And also there was something else that you said there that made me think of something. Yeah, so the use of keeping in touch days in that way is really, really good, right? But also, like, I'm quite mindful of putting the pressure on people, parents, to take those keeping in touch days, because all of our experiences on maternity or paternity leave are different, right? And actually, you might not be in the right headspace. So actually, it's giving that option that, yes, let's set it up so, yeah, you can use one of your keeping in touch days. But actually, if you don't feel like that's not what you want to do because you haven't slept for a week or whatever, that's also okay. So actually, because it can also have the opposite impact as well. And I've seen that happen where, people are pressurized to use those keeping in touch days to you know, have that FaceTime, but then they just don't feel like, you know, they're up for it. I guess trying to, yeah, just give people options, right? And also there's no hard and fast rule, and what works for someone might not work for someone else, and what you might think will work for you might change your mind in 3 months, right? And yeah, the more we can share these stories, the better. And that's a brilliant story that you shared, because then it does give someone a bit of inspiration. Oh yeah, maybe that's something I can try.
Yeah, I won't steal their thunder, and hopefully they will share it. I think you've hit the nail on the head there about there's a lot of nuance that sits behind these conversations, and that word nuance is splashed around an awful lot, and we don't want to forget the meaning of it. It just isn't what works for one person, and your parents are not this homogenous group of people, just like line managers aren't. Everybody's got their own experiences that they bring to the table. We've all got our own backgrounds, experiences, cultures that we're all wading through to try and figure out what being a parent means to us. And I think one of the things that I found really interesting was something that you'd shared about your kind of model around the interaction between inclusion and well-being. And a lot of what we're talking about doesn't always get labeled, if you will, for want of a better word, as inclusion, but essentially that is what we're asking for. It is about creating inclusivity in the workplace so that you can bring your whole self, so that you are able to have that kind of psychological safety, I suppose. And I think it would be, I'd love to hear in your words, because I've read it, but it'd be so lovely to hear in your words why it is so important that we link these together, particularly from an employer perspective.
Yeah, it's so important, right? And I often just find that we don't talk about it enough. Like, I've been working in the D&I space for, gosh, like 10 or so years now. And I think what I found a couple of years ago was actually we were talking about all the practical things. You know, what can we change around policies? What can we change around systems? But what I was seeing was actually the well-being impact of the lack of inclusion on people. And that, you know, manifested in so many different ways, right? So, you know, it could be somebody being a minority in a room and not having, like, you know, you'd call it the courage to speak up, or not feeling like they belonged, and so they couldn't speak up. And often that would heighten, you know, the feeling of imposter syndrome as well. So that's one way I was seeing it. And then I started seeing it and felt it when I became a mum, right? And this whole, I guess, just, yeah, your whole life changes. And then you go back into the workplace and the mental load is just like, it's just so real. Like, you just never switch off, right? Or it's easy not to switch off because you're working and then you're parenting and then you're working and then you're parenting. And it was really tough for me. And then when I spoke to the other women and parents about it, you know, they all said it was tough for them, but it was something that nobody was talking about because they were just talking about, you know, flexibility and all of those things. And when we dug into the why were we not talking about this? It was because about the stigma, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, many people feel like, oh, we should just be able to cope, right? You know, I think 5 years ago we were talking about how can she have it all, right? And all of that narrative. And actually people were feeling, okay, I should be able to have it all. But in reality, you can't, right? You need to take breaks. You need to have me time. You need to look after yourself. You need to take rest days where you actually rest. So yeah, so I think it's just so, so important. And I've seen it just come up in so many different ways. And from an employer perspective, getting back to your question, I guess the first thing is around the awareness of it, that actually recognizing the fact that actually supporting people on their well-being journey is so important. And it's great to have the mental health support and for them to, you know, to get counseling or therapy and all the other great things that it offers. But actually, often by then, it's, you know, can be too late. And there are things that we can do earlier on, right? And there's these interventions that we can take place in our daily lives that can often like stop some people having to get to that point where they need that mental health support. And more companies are recognizing this. You know, that was one good thing that came out of COVID and lockdown. Like there's a lot more focus on mental health, but I still think there's a lot more we can do to like, yeah, bring well-being into our everydays, encouraging people to build some, you know, positive daily habits, taking those breaks, you know, simple things like not eating lunch at the desk and not rewarding long hours and things like that. There's so much. And yeah, I just feel like there's just still so much to do in this place, especially from a preventative viewpoint. Like we do a lot now on reactive mental health support, and that's brilliant, but we need to do a lot more in the preventative space.
Which I think just goes back to reinforcing what we were talking about earlier in the conversation, that if you are doing something that is a quick fix, always making sure that there is some sort of long-term big sister or big brother initiative, not big brother, that sounds wrong, but that kind of, it goes hand in hand, so that don't kind of devalue one over the other. And like with anything, two things can be true at the same time, can't they? You know, different emotions can coexist and run alongside each other. And I think sometimes we would do well to remember that we can feel incredibly joyful and incredibly grateful for what we have with family setups and things that we have aspired to want to achieve. And also at the same time, we can feel really exhausted and really like, actually, I need a break. I think sometimes it's that strive for perfection that can sometimes impede some of those feelings and some of those really leading us to hold back. And, you know, nobody has to overshare. I'm all for boundaries. But I think if we can encourage as much storytelling as possible about the realities of being that parent in the workplace who, you know, I work with a number of people at the minute who have dual caring responsibilities with parents. They've got aging parents and they're also looking after them. And that brings a whole different dynamic to the plate for everybody. But you know, these are still people that want to do well in their workplace. They work for their careers. They enjoy being in the workplace, but they're not defined by what they do. They have a lot more going on for them.
Yeah, and everyone does, right? You know, you don't have to be a parent to have other things going on for you. Yes, you can be a carer. You can have a lot of other things going on in your life, right? And yeah, it's just recognizing that we are all human. We have a life outside of work, and yeah, we have emotions and we have lots of other things that are going on. And actually, you know, work doesn't have to be number one all the time, and that's okay. That doesn't mean you're not committed. That doesn't mean you're not ambitious. And it's not a weakness, you know, it's not a weakness to say I need a break. It's not a weakness to say, yeah, I'm gonna go on holiday and yeah, turn off my phone and not check my emails. Actually, things like that need to be celebrated. And that's where I do really advocate storytelling, right? The more especially senior leaders and managers can actually role model like turning off their phone, not replying to emails. And I know a lot of managers say that, you know, they have a thing at the bottom of their signature saying, you know, I work flexibly, so I might, you know, email you in the evening, I don't expect you to reply. And I understand that, and that has a place. But at the same time, there are these signals that people are getting when they're getting emails at 11 o'clock that, okay, my manager's working at 11, right? And actually, yeah, I think we just have to face into the fact that as managers and leaders, like we have a responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that can be quite important. And I think role modeling is just such a powerful way to, I guess, give people permission to do things for themselves.
I would really love to ask you one final question, if I may. You know, the whole part-time, part-ambitious narrative. What would you love to say to people who hold that, who really believe part-time is part-ambitious? What would you love people to, how can they move beyond that?
Oh, big question. How can they move beyond that? It's like, just open your thinking, right? It's like, you know, wouldn't everybody like to just work 3 or 4 days a week and then, you know, still achieve their career goals and have a great life where you go on holiday, look after your family? You know, that would be like a brilliant setup for most people, right? Mm. And actually, that can just seem so alien to people that if you, yeah, you want to work 3 to 4 days a week because you want to do something else, which is outside of work for those other days. But yeah, you know, I think if you step back, and especially as we get older into our life, all of these things become more important. So yeah, so someone prioritizing their non-work commitments over their work commitments, you know, it doesn't mean that their work commitments are not important. And surely everyone can understand that to some level. Like even if you're not a parent, you know, you might have a great hobby. You might love to go traveling or mountain climbing. I imagine, you know, every Friday you could go do something like that. Wouldn't that be brilliant? But you could still achieve your career ambition. So, you know, this isn't just about being a working parent, right? This is just about us all, you know, having like fulfilling lives and doing all those things. And but especially as a parent, weekends are not the same, right? So, you know, it's just not the same. So often, like, you know, some parents I know, they'll be working 4 days a week, and that fifth day actually isn't with their child, it's with themselves, right? Because weekends are no longer for themselves, and that's so important. So yeah, so I guess just take that bigger picture approach, and you just understand everyone is different. And when you become a parent, some people might want to actually say, I want to pause on my career. That's okay, right? In 2 years' time, they may then decide they want to lean in again. That's great. And if they don't feel like that, that's also okay. But then other people may want to go part-time, work 3 to 4 days a week, but they still want to accelerate and continue to move. And that's also okay. Just, yeah, everyone is different.
What a line to end on as well.
God, I know, right? It feels like we're getting really philosophical there as well.
Yeah, no, I love it. But I know it's not an easy concept, but it is simple to think everyone is different. And I just think it is so easily forgotten. But ultimately, that feels like that's the key to unlock some of this stuff. So thank you for ending on that, completely unprompted, because I think that's a really lovely line. If people are listening and they want to come up and find more out about your work and you, where is the best place for them to come and have a little nosy round?
The best place to find me is on LinkedIn. As I said in this podcast, yes, I'm always on there. Well, not always. I do take weekends off. But yeah, find me on LinkedIn. And yeah, happy to connect. And if you have any questions or want to talk more about anything we've talked about, yeah, I always love having these conversations. And even if you have a different perspective, right? I love getting into debates about these things.
Amazing. That is an open invite. And I will put the link to Shivani's LinkedIn profile in the show notes. So if you're listening to this and wondering where that will be, it will be in there. So go find her. Thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your incredible wisdom. It has been an absolute delight, and I'm really, really grateful to you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it as well. Thank you.
Thanks very much for tuning in to Power of the Parent, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate, review and subscribe. And if you could tell all your friends about the podcast, that would be wonderful. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find me on Instagram. Just search Power of the Parent. See you next time.